Well, I suppose the best thing, Emer, is to start with why I went to Burundi. Being World Secretary for Holy Childhood, my idea, although it will be impossible, would be to visit all these countries where we have projects, but of course there's only so much time you can spend on travelling and you have only so much energy. But 3 or 4 years ago, of course, the nuncio in Burundi was Monsignor Michael Courtney. And he had invited me. We didn't know each other, but we were in touch by correspondence because of the projects that we do there with the children. And both being Irishmen, he says, why don't you come down and have a look at Burundi? So that was my intention, but I just didn't get around to it. With so many trips, as I say, I can't always do it. And then, unfortunately, Monsignor Courtney was murdered about 3 years ago, just before he was due to be transferred to Cuba. But the new nuncio is Monsignor Paul Gallagher from Liverpool in England, and he took up the offer, and I was determined this time I will get down to Burundi. And it worked out well. So I left Rome at midnight on Ethiopian Airlines on June the 4th, and it's a good route down through Addis Ababa and on down to Bujumbura, the capital. To be honest with you, like, I'm never too worried about situations I'm going into. Now, I will not go to Baghdad yet. I am taking it easy there. But I remember other situations where there were problems in Sri Lanka some years ago, and it was thought that it was a bit dangerous to go in. But I went anyway, and it worked out well. One has to be a bit careful, of course. So I didn't know myself, actually, that peace talks were going on in Dar es Salaam. As I landed in Burundi, I was happy to hear that. It wouldn't have bothered me anyway, because someone else might have studied all that to make sure that it was peaceful there. I knew that if the nuncio has invited me down and our National Director of Pontifical Mission Societies, it's safe enough, you know. So let's say I was kind of innocent then going in as well, because once I was there, I realised there had been bombardments just 2 days before that around Bujumbura, the capital, where I was, of course, initially staying. But during the 10 days I was there, I didn't come across any. I had lots of conversations, of course, you know. I didn't come across anything that physically put me in danger, but I was aware of what could happen. There is a big military police presence, but that's probably a good thing in that they are now integrating well the army and police force with Hutus and Tutsis, the two ethnic groups that are there and have been traditionally in problems, in conflict.
Yeah, this is the main factor, I suppose, that has been impeding progress within the nation itself.
Yes.
Can you just give, for our listeners perhaps who don't remember the whole story behind Burundi's civil and ethnic war, what exactly happened?
Yeah, well, people will probably think immediately about Rwanda, which of course was the most dramatic expression in there, and was it 93-94, when about 800,000 Tutsis were murdered by Hutu extremists, and a lot of Hutus were murdered in that group as well. It's not clearly defined that it's all the Hutus against the Tutsis or all the Tutsis against the Hutus. If you saw the movie Hotel Rwanda, and this is typical, the main actor in the movie, you know, representing a real person, is Hutu, but his wife is Tutsi. And all of these were affected and murdered and all the rest for during that time. So Burundi has a similar problem in that you have the two ethnic groups there, the Tutsis and the Hutus. I would think that nowadays there's a great effort to integrate the groups, to work towards peace. And so I was very happy that last Saturday they signed a peace treaty in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. Now we hope that that treaty will hold. The history of this is kind of difficult, I suppose. The Tutsis were always a rather favoured ethnic group, especially in colonial times. The Hutus suffered because of that. And this explains a lot of the bad feeling and really strong, deep feelings of hate that you find there. But please God, I saw a lot of people working together, working for the future of Burundi. There is a man in charge of Holy Childhood in Burundi, a layman. He travelled around with me to the five dioceses of the seven that I visited. And he's Hutu, married to a Tutsi lady. And I mean, with the ordinary people, of course, this is what they want. They just want to get on with life. Burundi has the possibility of being a very rich country. It's small, but it's got lots of green and vegetation. It could do a lot of good. But there are these deeply entrenched feelings of hate and hurt and segregation that will have to be got over. Signing the peace treaty is not a magical formula for peace, but at least it gives some indication of what could be the situation in Burundi.
The path to peace and reconciliation after years of conflict, perhaps one of the first steps on those paths, of course, is looking towards the next generation. And this is something that is very much central to your job and your mission in particular.
Yes.
Would you like to just take us through your visit to these five provinces? Taking us through the highlights of this visit and how it affected you and what perhaps struck you most.
Yeah, well, when I go to a country like Burundi, I'm always in touch with the nuncio, of course, and the national director. I try and make the trip to coincide with a meeting of the bishops. That way I can see all the bishops at once, which is important in a big country where you wouldn't be able to get around to see everyone. Now, Burundi is not that big, but big enough, some bad roads and that, which makes it difficult. So I had asked the nuncio to arrange the trip when I could meet all the bishops. So that was great. I landed on Monday, the 5th of June, and on Tuesday, the 6th, I was driven to Gitega, another city, where we had the meeting of the bishops. So I was able to speak to the bishops about Holy Childhood, the projects and what we're trying to do. An important point here, Emer, is that not everyone knows what Pontifical Mission Societies are about. Not everyone knows what the Holy Childhood is about. The bishops receive money and sometimes don't know, well, what's this about? They're very happy to get the money, of course. So I'm part of my work is explaining, especially to bishops, because it's not just money. We're not just another aid organisation. It's all about evangelisation. Holy Childhood is reaching out through children to other children to let everyone know that Jesus Christ is our Saviour. And that was the philosophy of our founder, Bishop Charles IV Bean Janson, in 1843 in France. So I had the meeting with the bishops. That was great. I spent a day there with them. But what I'm basically doing is visiting projects. We're helping AIDS babies. We're running orphanages. We're rehabilitating child soldiers. We're running care centres for street children. So, of course, I want to see how the money is being spent. I trust people, but we have to see that the money is being spent well. So a lot of my time is one project after the other to really milk me while I'm there, you know, but that's good. And, of course, it's very rarely that anyone from Rome is going to be there in a place like Burundi. It's a small country, a bit out of the way. It's not easy to get them. So I'm like the Pope when I arrived there. I must say I enjoy that. Everything is laid on for me and taken around. But we go right into the bush, over bad roads and into the most remote orphanages and places. Oh, God, you can imagine how the people feel. Go delirious and especially with a freckle-faced Irish man, you know. It's the children scream, the little babies scream when they see me, no. But the younger ones are a bit more used to white people and come forward. And because they're orphans, they just love to be hugged and taken up by you, which I quite enjoy as well, you know. So it was 5 days, fairly grueling, 5 days, up early in the morning and then one project after the other. I've spoken with some national directors who do this sort of work as well. And they find this grueling. Some of them just say, listen, today I don't want to see another orphanage, or today I don't want to talk to any more bishops, just give me a day free. But I enjoy it, actually. I don't say that. I'd say, no, I'm here for 7 days only. Do what you can. Make sure I see as much as possible. I'm here to be your ambassador, you know.
Can you talk to us about those projects?
Well, I'm always amazed, you see, at how hard people are working. I'm in Rome. I'm the Secretary General in Rome. But if I didn't have these people on the ground in Burundi, the work wouldn't go on at all. So I'm talking about the diocesan directors that we have, local people who strive to make sure that our money gets to the right place. We insist that every country, even the poor ones, make a contribution. We're not just in it for charity, it's solidarity. Okay, Germany will give the few million and the United States, but I'm impressed with the €100 that comes out of Burundi or the $50 out of Sierra Leone. If I could just mention it about Sierra Leone during the Civil War, when they were chopping people's arms off and all that, we still got $50 from the children of Sierra Leone for the World Fund. I cried when that money came in. I mean, they're in civil war. This is a few years ago. People are being murdered. I've seen, watching it on CNN and BBC, and we still get $50 from our kids there. I mean, this is what it's about, Emma, you know. So in Burundi, we have, I went to, let's say, Mother Teresa's place. She has a place just on the outskirts of Bujumbura, always the most destitute, the most abandoned. I got a fright there because we walked into the orphanage and they brought us first to where all the little babies are, 2 and 3 months old, in little cots. And then suddenly something grabbed me around my right leg. And my hand instinctively went down and I went over some kind of fuzzy thing. I thought it was an animal, but I didn't feel any bite. This all happens in a flash. So I looked down. It was a little black kid, black of course, fuzzy hair, wrapped around my leg. And then again, you know, lacking always this warmth and of a father or a mother figure. I thought at first it was an animal because I just didn't see it. I'm looking at the babies in the cots. Something grabs my right leg. My hand involuntarily goes down and brushes over a fuzzy head, which felt like some kind of animal. And then this little black face looking up. You know, I lifted him up, of course. I was there visiting. He ran in. And then we had 4 or 5, 10 of them. And then the photographs are taken. But the work that our people are doing is just fantastic. The sisters, the lay people, the priests, the brothers and all that. A lifetime of service. See, it's great for me. I fly down from Rome and I arrive in Burundi and I move around. And I know I'm getting out in 7 or 8 days' time. You know, it wouldn't be easy for me, I have to admit, to stay there. I go all over the world. I enjoy being in Rome. It gets me home to Ireland now and then. Most of the people now, not like the others, are native Burundian people. 30 years ago, still would have been a lot of the White Father missionaries and Severians, still a good few Italian Severians there. Most of these places now are run by Burundian sisters and orders and all the rest of it. But still, they're very dedicated. Their whole life is based there. You can see the warmth with which the sisters, like mothers, pick the children up and bring them to eat, or especially if they're handicapped and can't walk. So it was great to see that every day because, as I say, if I stay in Rome, I'm just sitting in my office, I know what's happening in theory, but I need to see it. I need to see those sisters holding up those children, loving them, looking after them. I need to see a doctor. I saw an Egyptian doctor come in at Mother Teresa's place, giving his services free, looking at the children, testing their hearts and their lungs and all the rest of it. It's beautiful.
Can you tell us a little bit about, for example, even taking this orphanage, the level of orphans in Burundi, the children who end up being cared for by the missionary sisters and brothers, are they war orphans?
Yeah, this is it. A lot of them are orphans from the war, from the civil war, and many of them were abandoned, just walking around the streets in the bigger cities like Bujumbura. Just living on the pickings, you know, leftovers and all the rest of it. There are all sorts of very, very sad stories about fathers murdered and mothers murdered and others then who had to go into refugee status in Tanzania, though some of them are coming back. I saw a big presence of the United Nations there. We saw a lot of trucks. My local director explained to me that there were people being brought back from Tanzania now. Tanzania is on the border, because of the peace treaty. So what we're praying for all the time we were there, and I heard it and took it up myself, of course, is that the treaty lasts. That, you know, please God, it would be possible for people to live in peace. Because every family there has a story, Tutsi and Hutu, about loss, about parents killed, about brothers killed. Monsignor Courtney went into the thick of it to try and use his short time there to bring peace. He went out to meet the rebels and he dealt with the government and he kept on the move. And unfortunately, I suppose, like Monsignor Romero in El Salvador in 1980 the whole person of Jesus Christ, the one who's doing the most work for peace and the most loving, gets killed. Because unfortunately, there always are elements who don't understand this, who just eliminate these people. So, Monsignor Courtney was only a week off leaving the country to go as nuncio to Cuba. and was shot dead. That is still a mysterious thing. It doesn't seem to be known who shot Monsignor Courtney. I won't go into that too much now, but he is regarded now as a martyr. Everywhere I went, Bishop spoke about how much he listened to them, he had time for them. A lot of the people talk about him, how he reached out, how he learned the local language and that. And I think Monsignor Gallagher as well will be hoping that this peace treaty will last, because he's moving around the country, visiting and keeping in touch with people. And if there is a treaty, it means moving around is easy. Now, I did seven dioceses. I did five dioceses of the seven that was there. We won't mention the two I didn't go to, but it is still a bit insecure there. So they didn't bring me there, you know. The good thing is our people on the ground know where it's safe to go and where not. So let's say, what I'm trying to say, it's not over by any means. My last Sunday there, I joined the Bishop of Bujumbura to celebrate Mass. It was the Feast of the Holy Trinity. And we celebrated that in the big shrine there run by the Schoenstatt Fathers. They're coming out of Chile German Foundation, big devotion to Mary, and a tremendous outpouring of love and devotion to our Blessed Lady. The bishop invited me to lunch afterwards. Again, he spoke about the difficulties and all the rest of it. I don't speak French, but nearly every religious person there speaks Italian. All the bishops and priests seem to have studied in the Urbaniana and other universities here in Rome. And so that got me through all right. And even with French, I wouldn't have been that well off, because when you go to the orphanages and all that, it's the local language. I think it's Kyunga, something like that, that the people speak. So I had my director with me. He speaks Italian. He studied as well over here, and he did all the translation work for me. So we got around quite well.
Were there any stories in particular that really struck you, that speaking not only to your national directors, perhaps even meeting the missionary sisters, the lay people who work within these projects?
Yes.
Yeah. Was there any project that you were particularly proud of or particularly happy with?
They took me to see a place outside of Gitega. Now, it's interesting, Bujumbura is not an archdiocese. Gitega is another city, and Bujumbura is the capital, but Gitega is an archdiocese. And just outside that and high up, so quite a nice climate, they took me to visit an orphanage that we're helping, but an extraordinary woman there called Mama Rosa, who's, she doesn't know how old she is, but looking at her, we reckon probably about 90. But she has spent all her life looking after orphan children. She started about, it seems, 60 years ago, when she saw the number of children that were on the street and needed help, orphans. Parents would have been dying of diseases in that time. And she just decided that this was her life. She never became a nun. She never married. She just looks after children. And I think in all that time, she might have been in hospital once. She doesn't bother with doctors or anything, but she seems to know about local herbs and all that. A fascinating character. You could see it in her face. A finely chiselled face, you know, a delight to look at. Now a bit wizened, of course, at nearly 90. And a person totally dedicated to the children. Obviously, later on then, she worked when there was nothing, only giving food to the children. There was no money. But over the years, people have become interested in her. She's never interested in going beyond that little area where she works. Would know nothing about technology, not interested in travelling or anything like that, but is quite happy with the help that we give. She was probably the person that most impressed me, because of the fact that coming from a Burundi, ordinary Burundi family, normally would have been to get married and that, if you weren't going into religious life. But she had this spark then to dedicate herself to the children, and still going strong, you know, at nearly 90 years of age. Fantastic. And then, as I say, you meet so many people there who dedicate themselves completely. I deal with the children, of course. I did go to the seminaries as well. I visited several of the seminaries. And again, the vocations are overflowing. You know, it's to stand in a seminary there with 290 young men going on for the priesthood, and then I go into Ireland and there might be in a diocesan seminary 10 or 15. Myself with the Divine Word Missionaries, we don't have vocations anymore in Northern Europe. So I didn't just keep to visiting the orphanages and all the rest, which is my work and which I did most of that. I went into the seminaries as well. They brought me there. So there's a tremendous spurt of life in Burundi, in spite of all that's happened. There's a great centre in Burundi run by a padre, Father Claudio, an Italian Severian priest, the Kamenge Youth Centre. Very well built up. I mean, Claudio has great contacts all over the world, but he's really built up this place as a centre for Hutu and Tutsi youth to mix, and also Muslim youth, because Burundi would be more Catholic and Christian than Muslim, but there are some Muslims there. So this is a great centre. Claudio is a very interesting character, larger than life. He's running this centre in Bujumbura. He's lived there through the war years and stayed on. And it's just tremendous to see that so many people follow the missionary ideal of loving Jesus through the people with which they come into contact every day. And a lot of work has been done, but there's just so many children. I mean, they come out of the woodwork, literally, when you're there. They just, well, there's 10 or 15 looking at you. And then when you go to take a photograph, there's about 1,500 suddenly there, you know. We had Mass in a church just outside a built-up town, but a huge, huge church. There must have been 2,600 kids there for that Mass, all involved with Holy Childhood, you know.
A lot of these children would be orphans.
Orphans again, living on the compound of the mission. Yes, so many orphans, everywhere you went.
And obviously, Holy Child Missions is very involved in helping these children to live a decent and dignified life. To get the, not only to feed them and to make sure that they're clothed and healthy, but also perhaps to educate them.
Give them medical attention.
Exactly.
Yes.
What about their future, insofar as from what age group to what age group are the missions in general concerned with, firstly? And the second question I'd have to ask you is that of adoptions.
Yes.
What with the adoption crisis in a lot of Western societies, there has been the tendency for Western couples to seek children elsewhere, particularly in the developing world, such as Asia, I know India.
Yeah.
Bangladesh, but
China.
Also some China, but also some African nations.
Mm.
Do people adopt these orphans from Burundi? How is it handled?
Yeah.
And is this, in your opinion, a positive thing or a negative thing?
Yeah, we Holy Childhood works with children up to 14 years of age. That's our sort of age group. It might go on up to 16, but generally speaking, our philosophy is that we you know, because you can't look after everyone, we don't have the resources. So the children we help are up to 14 years of age. I didn't see much evidence. I'd need to talk to some more knowledgeable people living in the country, but I didn't see much evidence of adopting children from outside. In Burundi, in some of the places, when the children reach a certain age, they are given up to adoption locally. Also, there's a situation where maybe one of the parents is still alive, but just cannot bring the child up, whether the father or the mother, especially in the case where the father is left on his own. He wouldn't be able to bring up a two-day-old baby, for instance. So the baby is brought to the sisters or the orphanage, and when he or she is a certain age, like 8 or 9, the father might come back for the child. He might have married in the meantime, and the mother might be interested. They love their children. There's no problem in having loads of children there. So they'd be quite happy to come back and take the child out. The hard work has been done by the sisters, of course. The child has been weaned and brought up and all the rest of them. When I was there now to put a child into my arms, I was so nervous. A four-week-old child, you know, holding her in my two hands just like that. She had been abandoned, just left at the door, which we hear of so often, you know, in the old days in the West as well. Just left at the door. They know nothing about the mother. But they took her in. And the child is growing and will be okay. The great thing is the number of babies that the sisters were telling about were just on death's door, and some died, of course. But the other ones now, they'd point out a two-year-old who's nice and plump like any Western kid, and they said, you should have seen that kid, Father, the day. He was like the size of a finger or something, or you'd put him into the palm of your hand. So I don't know about foreign adoption. I would think because of the political situation in Burundi, it wouldn't have been that stable for Western couples to be going down there to adopt children. I'd need to check and see if there is an official policy on that. But I do know that children are adopted locally, and that they like the parents to maintain contact with the children. They understand that sometimes the parents cannot physically look after the children, and that's why some of them are not completely orphaned. They will be given back to the families. But a lot of them are orphaned, and of course, the usual problem where the orphanage will prepare the kids and educate them, but they're a bit doubtful about the future. What about jobs? If there's peace, there are possibilities. So that's why we have to pray so much for peace.
My final question, well, one of my last questions is this. You also spoke earlier about the different realities of these orphans. And one thing you mentioned which struck me a lot was the work that your missions and projects do with former child soldiers.
Yes.
This is a scourge, particularly in the Great Lakes regions and in Central Africa, that so many children were used and abused by the various factions fighting for power. Did you have the occasion to meet with any of these children when you were visiting the projects, or did you have an occasion to speak to anyone who actually works firsthand with these children who have obviously been so scarred by such...
Yes, not in Burundi this time. I think it'll probably come because, as I said, they've just signed the peace treaty. A lot of these younger armed people and children are probably still being used. That is something we hope that will develop. We're helping, for instance, in Sierra Leone after the Civil War. It's a couple of years now. So there's a more developed programs. The children have come forward who have been involved with child soldiers. But you know, the way you can't just step back from a life like that overnight. The children are damaged physically and mentally. The mental thing, of course, is particularly important. So any project we take on is the rehabilitation of a child. That would mean being able to pay for psychiatrists and that sort of help that they need, social workers to gradually bring up. But always, our projects are always run through the local bishop. So we depend on the local bishop to let us know what's happening, to speak for the stability of a particular session that's looking after these children, because we'd be very jealous of our money. We have to be faithful to the donors and transparent that any money we do send goes right into the actual need for which it was intended. So I've been in touch with this in Uganda, because you've heard of the situation of Gulu in northern Uganda and the Lord's Army, which is based in Sudan. I mean, that has recruited by force children from the villages in northern Uganda. Children have been forced to murder their own parents to prove that they could enter into these ranks. And some of these children have escaped and come back to Uganda, and they need help. So this is the sort of project we're helping as well. There's about 300,000 child soldiers still worldwide being recruited. Some of them as young as 8 years of age. They use the Kalashnikov machine gun, the AK-47, and they're able to slice that down so it fits, as they say, nicely into the arms of an 8-year-old. Can you imagine it? And then they send the 8-year-olds out in front because they've no fear. It's interesting. The big men stay behind. They send the young ones out in front to draw fire. And of course, that's why many of them are killed. Mm-hmm. So this is still going on as we're talking, Eimear. It's a scourge, and there's about 300,000 child soldiers in the world.
Would they be concentrated primarily in Africa?
Primarily in Africa, yes. In the Great Lakes region, as you were saying, but also in places like Sri Lanka, in the war that's going on there, and hopefully peace will come there, because that's becoming particularly difficult at the moment.
For those who are listening to you speaking about the work that the Holy Child Missions carries out across the world, and particularly in Africa, for anyone out there who is maybe sitting on a few extra pence and would like to help, how do they go about doing so?
Yeah, well, of course, we're always there. I have a staff of 9, 10 with me, and we work at the Palazzo di Propaganda Fide in the Spanish Steps. So anyone who's interested in knowing more about our work is very welcome to come along. It's at the Piazza di Spagna number 48, and there's a phone number I can give as well, which would be the usual 06-6988-0260. That's 6988-0260 with the prefix 06, and we'd be delighted for anyone to come along. And then, of course, if anyone is interested in helping for a project, we're delighted to help with that as well. We have all the contacts. Many people ask us to set them up, and we always can guarantee that the money goes to the project, because we work closely with the local bishop, the local nuncio, and our national director to make sure that these are bona fide projects.
As in propaganda fide.
As in propaganda fide, yes.
Father, sorry, Monsignor Burns, for anyone who isn't in the Rome area, is there an email address or an internet site that perhaps they can find more easily on the internet?
Yeah, if for the website, they should go into the normal Vatican website. What is that? I can't think of it.
www.vaticanradio.org.
And that will lead into the different dicasteries, different organisations, and they can look for Holy Child at Sancta Infantia, and they'll get our website. And then we have an email, which is Vati, V-A-T-I, like Vaticana, but Vati 176 at poem, P-O-I-M, .va. So Vati 176 at poem, .va.
Anybody wishing to know any
to
more,
know
about,
any more about it, or who would like to unload themselves of extra pennies or whatever, we'd be quite happy to help them on that score.
And
the work is so great, isn't it? You know, I mean, the great thing, as I say, in Burundi and the other kinds of visits, is to see how money is being used properly, when we see all the stupid things that is done with money and how money is wasted, you know. We use it properly.